I'll show you politics in America. Here it is, right here. I think the puppet on the right shares my beliefs. I think the puppet on the left is more to my liking. Hey, wait a minute. There's one guy holding up both puppets. Shut up. Go back to bed, America. Your government is in control.
Read my lips.
Just send your cash.
There has never been so many lies, so much deception.
Doesn't anyone notice this? I feel like I'm taking crazy pills.
Please clap.
It's time for the Mike Madison Show, a new breed of conservative talk. Now, here's your host, Mike Madison.
Showtime! Woo!
All right, good morning. Welcome to the Mike Madison Show here at 103.9 WYAB. I'm your host, Mike Madison, here for 2 hours a day. I want to say hello to everybody and thank you. I had a great weekend this past weekend. I went down and saw my son in Lafayette, Louisiana, where he is attending the University of Louisiana Lafayette. A nice visit with him. I just want to let everybody know that he's a good kid, works hard, has a basically about a full-time job, and has, since he's been in college, he's worked in one form or another, and since he's been in Lafayette, he's had a job. He provides for himself, keeps all of his own spending money, everything. But I did want to thank. I just wanted to let you know that he's a good, solid kid. As everybody is now chipping in to help put him through college, I thought it would be a good message to let everybody know that you got at least one good one there that you're coming through. I talked to him about it, the student loan forgiveness, when I was down there. This was I told him, I said, you never not bet against the government making another stupid decision. When I decided that he should probably take out student loans instead of paying for cash to go to college. So anyway, I just wanted to, on behalf of him, I wanted to say thank you for helping put him through college, to all the taxpayers out there, and also just let you know he's a solid individual. I believe your number one job as a parent is to put out a decent human being. They may be successful. They may be leaders in some field. They may be tremendous athletes. But I think the first job of every parent is to put out a decent human being. And if I do that, I will have considered my parenting to have been a success. And so far, so good. Anyway, got lots to get to today. There's actually some very good news coming out of Australia regarding COVID and their shot program. Now, I am going to be cautiously optimistic that maybe this same trend will come to the United States. But Australia, which, you know, we've reported on Australia a lot over the past couple of years, as they accepted some of the most draconian lockdowns and forced genetic therapies. They were forced into this grand experiment. Well, the tide may be turning a tiny bit down in Australia, and let's just hope it's the beginning of a world trend. I can't wait to get to that story. We'll do that in a little while. I have developed a habit. I don't know if it's a positive or a negative. I love SEC football. I think I've talked about this before. I don't ever remember who wins what. I couldn't tell you. I guess if I sat and thought about it for a second, which I won't do, I could tell you who won the national championship last year if I really thought about it. But I just don't store this information. I just enjoy the games as they go along. And so I found that on YouTube I can find entire games. Last night I watched the 2011 national championship between LSU and Alabama. Golly, LSU played terrible. Boy, they played bad. But I didn't remember this, so this was like a new game to me. It's interesting. My SEC season now is essentially it's 12 months long. It's kind of nice. My inability to remember the outcomes of these games has played in my favor. But I was watching the game yesterday, and I realized something. I thought, oh my gosh, you know, you hear the fans in the stands. They're cheering for Alabama. They're cheering for LSU. Nobody's cheering for the umpires. Nobody's cheering for the referee. But I realized that it just kind of struck me as I was watching that. I thought, well, maybe that's what hurts my ratings of this show. Nobody watches or cheers for anything when they're for the referee. And that's what my forte is here. I call balls and strikes. I call fouls. I call pass interference, regardless of which team is penalized. And it's really funny. Most people don't even really want the ref to be objective. They want the calls always to go for their side. I have a long history of this back in college and since, even when it was my team. And I went to University of Georgia and Mississippi State, so I could be watching a game with a bunch of people or, you know, at a game itself, and they'll replay something where my team has been penalized for pass interference, and I see it, and I'd be in the room all alone saying, oh, that definitely was. I mean, it was. That was pass interference. No, it wasn't. So being objective, not always popular. I am the referee. I'm the referee. I'm the line judge. I'm the umpire of the political theater out there, and maybe that's not necessarily popular. I don't know how many people show up to cheer for the referees in any game. I would imagine it is just close friends and family. So that shows you where probably my demographic is. It's tough to go against the team or the tribe. Everybody says they want objectivity until they're faced with it, and then it's not always so popular. But anyway, I soldier on. Quote of the day today, Thomas Sowell said, one of the painful signs of years of dumbed-down education is how many people are unable to make a coherent argument. They can vent their emotions, question other people's motives, make bold assertions, repeat slogans, anything except reason. He's dead on right now. If you've gotten into a conversation with anybody on just about any topic, most people are able to recite talking points, point out the flaws in somebody else, but they are not able to make a whole lot of coherent, reasonable arguments in anything. I wanted to talk a little bit about financial stuff today. There was a very important speech given on Friday. It's given very little attention to anybody outside of people who watch CNBC or Bloomberg. But it's the stuff that affects all of our lives in tremendous ways. Friday was a pretty bad day on Wall Street. I believe the Dow fell about 3.5%. The NASDAQ was down around 4% because the addicts addicted to debt found out that their dealer is dry. So they went into a bit of the detox shakes before I came on air. The markets were down again. And you can expect more of this until the financial smack, the monetary heroin, starts flowing again, because we're a nation built on a debt binge. We've been on a bender now for decades in this country. And Jerome Powell, the Federal Reserve head, the man who shall not be named on most radio, maybe that's focus groups. Nobody wants to hear anything about Jay Powell, although he is, what he says actually impacts, what he does impacts your life far more than most of the political characters in the political theater production we're treated to every day. He spoke at a Jackson Hole conference, and basically he said, we're going to fight inflation. Now, I'm going to read a little bit of his speech as I'm looking at it typed out here. It may be too much to read, and this was only a percentage of what he did. It was interesting. He apparently spoke for about 8 minutes, took no questions whatsoever, just read this prepared speech, dropped the mic, and left. But this is some of the things that Jerome Powell, the head of the Federal Reserve, said, because there's some things that involve you in there. He said, at past Jackson Hole conferences, I have discussed broad topics such as the ever-changing structure of the economy and the challenges of conducting monetary policy under high uncertainty. Today, my remarks will be shorter, my focus narrower, and my message more direct. Of course, understand that the challenges that are faced by the Federal Reserve right now are because of problems created by anyone, the Federal Reserve themselves. Powell went on to say the FOMC, that's the Federal Open Market Committee's overarching focus right now is to bring inflation back down to our 2% goal. That's right. For some reason, American citizens are absolutely fine. We find it completely normal that we have an institution unaccountable to anybody who says they want to destroy the value of your savings by 2% a year. This is actually their stated goal. Over 10 years, they want our currency to lose 20% of its value. It's a very odd thing. It's very well accepted. It's treated as if it's completely normal, but it is always going to be the middle class and lower classes that sacrifice for that. But he says their focus is to bring inflation back down to the 2% goal. Price stability is the responsibility of the Federal Reserve and serves as the breadrock of our economy. Without price stability, the economy does not work for anyone. In particular, without price stability, we will not achieve a sustained period of strong labor market conditions that benefit all. The burdens of high inflation fall heaviest on those who are least able to bear them. He's being truthful there. He's just being a little, as I talk about, there are outright lies and then there are lies of omission. And the lie of omission throughout his entire speech was that we caused this entire mess. We caused the inflation. We printed up money. We facilitated politicians spending well beyond the money that they collect. And we've printed up money for them, flooded this money into the economy. And we created this mess in the first place. This is left out of the speech anywhere. He says restoring price stability will take some time and requires using our tools to forcefully bring demand and supply into better balance. Reducing inflation is likely to require a sustained period of below-trend growth. Moreover, there will very likely be some softening of labor market conditions. While higher interest rates, slower growth, and softer labor market conditions will bring down inflation, they will also bring some pain to households and businesses. These are the unfortunate cost of reducing inflation, but a failure to restore price stability would mean far greater pain. The interesting thing about this, what he's saying is that they're going to have to keep interest rates, keep raising interest rates, and do it for a sustained period of time. Higher interest rates means it's harder for people to borrow. It costs more to borrow. And as I said, the market's freaked out about this because they love that debt. They want money and they want debt-based money and they want it at low interest rates. And so just the idea that we have an economy, the greatest economic engine that planet Earth has ever seen, cannot handle what used to be just a couple of decades ago completely normal interest rates, 5, 6%, 7, 8%. This has historically been very, very normal in a society. Now, in 2018, when Trump freaked out that they were raising rates, we got up to about 2.5% and the entire economy started falling apart and they immediately reversed course. This is all a result of what the Federal Reserve has done. Now, what he says is we are making our policy stance purposely to a level that will be sufficiently restrictive to return inflation to 2%. I can already tell this is boring to listen to. You have to imagine me reading it to you in a very calm, reassuring, authoritative voice that actually would put you to sleep if you were to listen to it. It's not a mistake that Federal Reserve officials get out and they do big, complicated word salad stuff in a very monotone voice. They're not exciting. They're not attractive. They're not dynamic people. This is all, I believe, by design to make sure that people are lulled to sleep when it comes to the economy. Here's the bottom line. What Jerome Powell said and what freaked Wall Street out is we're going to keep raising interest rates until we get inflation under control. We have no intention of turning around and pivoting right now. As a matter of fact, we need to keep inflation under control for some period of time. If inflation goes down, we're not done. We're going to keep interest rates higher just until we are absolutely assured that inflation has been wrung out of the system. This is what he said. Here's the spoiler alert. This is not what he will do. Now, this is a Mike Madison prediction, I guess. At some point, labor markets will soften. Inflation may come down a tad because as you head into a recession and people are losing jobs, their demand for everything from houses to cars to trinkets at Pier 1 go down. Is Pier 1 still a thing? I think it's still around. I don't know. It might have been one of the ones that was lost in the Great Recession. Anyway, as people lose jobs, demand does go down during recessions, and this may return inflation down a little bit. What Jerome Powell is saying is that they're serious about fighting inflation. Here's the thing. If they were really serious about fighting inflation, if inflation is running around 9%, 8.5%, 9%, by their figures, we all know it's probably somewhere in the 12 to 15% range. But even with their hocus-pocus calculations, if inflation is running around 9%, then the only way that you actually get inflation to go lower is to have interest rates above that level, at 10%, at 11%, at 12%. That's how you bring inflation down. That's how it was done in the early 1980s. They took interest rates up above the inflation rate. As I've said many times, it's like a beach ball. You got to get on top of it to push it under the water. You can't pinch at the bottom and try to drag it down. They will not do this. They are not serious about fighting inflation, and inflation will be with us for a while. Not only will they not tame inflation, because they lack the courage and the ability. It's very different. He talked a little bit about how they fought inflation back in the 1970s. The difference, we are so much deeper in debt across the board, from the individual to the corporation to the municipality to the country itself, that higher interest rates are basically a death sentence to a lot of businesses, both big and small. So they cannot afford to raise interest rates above the rate of inflation. Eventually, they will probably get a couple more interest rate rises, and interest rates may get up to around 3%, possibly 3.5%. The wheels will start coming off the bus, and they will immediately lower interest rates, and this will stoke even further inflation. That's the way this will play out. Wall Street believes that the Federal Reserve is serious about fighting inflation. They have done absolutely nothing. That shows that they are actually serious about fighting inflation. As I said, if inflation's 9%, they've raised interest rates to 2.5%. That is still a negative interest rate. The difference between the 9% inflation and the 2.5% interest rates that they have set on their overnight lending rate is 6.5%. It's still a 6.5% negative interest rate that they've got. They're not serious about it. Wall Street pretended that they were. But just hang in there, Wall Street. When things start coming apart, they will slam interest rates back down, and you can start mainlining debt right back into your veins as you've done before. This is a very sad state of affairs. This feels very endgame-ish. We talked a little bit about the fact they've got these central bank digital currencies waiting in the wings. We'll see exactly how this plays out, but it was just very interesting to see Wall Street's reaction to what is really a giant nothing burger. As far as this, if we had a sustainable economy with fully functioning businesses that were not saddled in record amounts of debt and didn't have a government that was completely addicted to this debt, then what the Federal Reserve said would have made no difference whatsoever. But because we are all addicted to debt, we're a bunch of junkies when it comes to debt, then when the dealer says he's running dry right now, they start getting the shakes. We'll see how this plays out. Be right back.
You know the day destroys the night, night divides the day. Try to run, try to hide, break on through to the other side. Break on through to the other side.
Most of the conversations that I had and with people based around politics, I got to be honest with you, I tend to stay away from political stuff when I can. But also, you know, most of the topics on conservative media in particular was all about this student loan forgiveness, whatever that means. It's just an absolute train wreck, horrific thing, wildly unfair. All the charges that the right makes against this thing, and many people, working people on the left who chose not to go to college and went into some trade or chose another path of work, they're actually pretty outraged, too, I believe. It's kind of interesting. You know, I guess there's 40 million people affected by this that may receive a benefit. I don't know what the polling is on whether this is popular or not. But this was really the topic of conversation for the past several days. You know, we usually get one solid weekend where one thing drives the narrative. I would imagine by the end of this week, we'll be on to something else. But it's just it's kind of interesting to me because I listen. I say it constantly. I'm an observer, and I'm always kind of interested in listening to people talk about this stuff. And I agree that this student loan forgiveness thing is terrible. I joke about the fact that it will benefit my son, but it's a terrible thing. But it's interesting to me the lack of outrage of people across the board when it comes to other spending. What I hear in conservative media is, why do I have to pay for a gender studies degree? Now, it's obviously that's a simplistic way to say this. I believe it was the House Freedom Caucus here in Mississippi that has calculated up. It's going to add about maybe $2,300 to the tax burden of every taxpayer out there. But this idea of why do I have to pay for this or I have to pay for that, you understand that horse left the barn a long, long, long time ago. And I made brief mention of this the other day because I'm curious as to where the outrage is about spending well over $500 billion per year. And I'm just taking half of our national defense apparatus, the $1 trillion we spend on, air quotes here in the studio, national defense, which is all of the bureaucracies and all the kickbacks to the weapons manufacturers, it's about $500 billion per year. That we spend to drop bombs on other people. And I know even if we do not care about the lives of ethnic Russians living in Ukraine who have been under attack by our weapons provided to the Ukrainians, we may not care about the lives of Iraqi children and moms and dads. We certainly don't seem to have any interest in what's happening to the poor people of Yemen right now, as our bombs are dropped on them over there. But it seems like maybe their conservatives do care about the cash. So it's being reported that this college forgiveness is going to be somewhere, you know, nobody knows. I guess if they put out a projection that it's set to cost $350 billion, then you know the real number is somewhere maybe north of a trillion, because they always, it's always two or three times what they say something's going to cost. But we spend this kind of money, and if you had to put a hierarchy on what you would like to see your tax dollars go to, is it better that it's used to destroy cities of countries halfway around the world that did nothing to us and destroying lives and killing innocent people, or sliding $10,000 to a college student? And I'm against it. Believe me, I'm against it. I'm just saying, if we have to rank our outrage on where this line in the sand that we say, why do I have to pay for X, Y, or Z? Should we hate giving college students $10,000? Should we hate that more or less than spending far more than that to murder innocent people halfway around the world that have done nothing to the United States? Also creates more things like terrorism and hostility to the United States. And I started thinking about, you know, the COVID spending, too. Congress originally passed that benefit of $600 a week. This was bipartisan passage of this bill. $600 a week is $30,000 per person. To everybody who stayed working during the pandemic, you just kept trucking along because you knew that COVID was the giant scam that it was, and you kept working. You were paying people who were put out of work by the government $30,000 over and above what their unemployment insurance was. $30,000, not $10,000 to a college student. Again, let me keep saying this. I am not for this student loan forgiveness. I don't know where in the hell Joe Biden thinks he's got the authority to just wave his magic wand and get rid of this debt. I think it may be challenged. It may be struck down. I played the clip on Friday where Nancy Pelosi said he does not have the authority to do this. So I don't think this is really over by a long shot, but I may be surprised. When Donald Trump got a hold of it, he reduced, air quotes here in the studio, Trump reduced those $600 extra a week payments on top of unemployment down to $300 by executive order, all by himself, all alone, the stroke of his pen. He started sending out $300 over and above unemployment insurance to everybody that was out of work during COVID. That's $15,000 a year. $15,000, to be accurate, $15,600 a year. And I just didn't seem to hear the same level of outrage by the right. Then I would say the same for the non-college Democrats who are now realizing that they are on the hook for college student loan debt that they did not accrue. And I started to think about it. Well, where's the outrage now when the Democrats, then I realized, never mind, Democrats love any check that gets cut by the federal government. They can't tie the fact that all of these checks that were part of the coronavirus relief bills, the endless stream of those, actually is what caused the inflation that they're griping about now. Democrats cannot see that because no one tells them that. But to be honest with you, I would say 95% of Americans do not understand the connection between the free stuff from government and the fact that you're paying for it now through inflation. So anyway, it's just interesting, as I say, as an observer, the outrage over the student debt thing is it's warranted. Absolutely warranted. I'm with you. It's outrageous. It's egregious. But the horse has left that barn a long time ago. We have sat back and allowed, and in some cases cheered for, egregious wastes of money, wealth transfer from the middle class and working class to defense contractors through all kinds of social programs. So, you know, just in context, I know the student loan thing is driving the news cycle right now, but in the laundry list of ways that money is confiscated, stolen from you and your family, and used for other purposes to distribute to somebody else, to me, this is probably maybe number 20 of the most egregious places that our government spends its money.
Be right back. I need your arms around me. I need to feel your touch. I need your understanding. I need your love so much.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. It appears we are having some trouble getting back to the moon. The Artemis rocket did not launch today. This is this new heavy load rocket that I believe we're sending a couple of female mannequins up somewhere in the vicinity of the moon. Not going to land on it yet. We're somehow we've gone backwards in technology from 1969. I'm just saying, you know, I get into these moon landing conversations with people. I'm not real serious about it. I'm not intense about it. I find it fascinating. There are certainly reasons, what I believe are logical reasons to question whether or not we went to the moon. And I understand this is also tips me over into the conspiracy theorist camp that is easily dismissed by people who believe there are no conspiracies. The government loves us and would never lie to us. Not about something that big, Mike. Oh, you may be right about them lying to us about what the inflation rate is. That's just a bookkeeping thing. We can understand the motives of that. But they'd never lie to us about something like the moon landing or 9/11. And so I understand, well, you know, how I can come across. And I almost find it fascinating. Every time I leave a conversation like that, I'm always wondering, I wonder what's being said in, as people leave somewhere where we've had a conversation. I wonder what kind of conversation is being had about me in the car on the ride away. But anyway, we're supposedly attempting to get back to the moon. not today. Looks like Friday they're going to try to launch this Artemis rocket. Well, when it comes to comes to some ways that we are tricked by the government, nothing is really worse than what we've seen with this obvious payoff to Big Pharma and the genetic therapy shot program they've put us out on. So I've got some clips on here, and I'm going to end this hour with what I think is some really fantastic news out of Australia. Very depressing to have watched Australia for the last 2 years, kind of thinking of them as our, you know, kind of our Western brothers and sisters down there, a free country, a formerly free country anyway, and watched how they were just trampled under heel when it came to COVID and the fact that they went along with it largely. I've talked to people who had relatives in Australia, and you would think that they would be incensed by the draconian measures that were taken in Australia and New Zealand. He said, no, I've got relatives down there. They seem okay with it. It's amazing to watch. But, you know, some of our fellow countrymen here have been absolutely okay with the draconian measures that were taking place here in the United States. But anyway, and I've got an observation on next hour. Very interesting one. Things are changing around this shot program. And it's another thing, as an observer with no dog in the hunt, I'm interested to see how this plays out. It looks like there's starting to be some blame shifting. It's like they're starting to try to cover for these shots, realizing that the news and the statistics are not doing the pro-shot people any favors. Now, I thought this was interesting. This was a CBS segment on a chart showing that more vaccinated people than unvaccinated people are dying.
There's a new chart making the rounds on social media, and it's easy to misinterpret what it's telling you.
It appears to say most people dying of COVID-19 lately are actually fully vaccinated. CBS 17 digital reporter Jody McCrary is fact-checking it.
Now, what this chart shows is deaths in vaccinated people now outnumber those among the unvaccinated. But an expert tells me it leaves out a very important detail, how old those people are.
Now, isn't that interesting? Suddenly, they're worried about age. Now, when we got the endless streams of how many people died today from COVID, well, there was no mention of age there. They made you believe that just everybody was at risk of dropping dead. You're a perfectly healthy 34-year-old. Mask up and get your shots. No, they freaked everybody out. Suddenly, they want us to pay attention to the age of things.
Look closer at this chart you may have seen online. At some point after February, weekly deaths in vaccinated people surpassed those who didn't get a vaccine. That's the black line moving over the blue one. But UNC Dr. David Weber says what it's missing is age.
Most of the cases we're seeing now of deaths, or many of them, are in older people, much like we saw 2 years ago.
Yes, but 2 years ago when we were seeing the deaths of elderly people dying from COVID, you never couched it that way. You told everybody just by going to the grocery store and not obeying the arrows on the floor and masking and social distancing and freaking out and getting your shots, you were all going to die. It's just funny. Suddenly now age matters when it comes to the statistics.
Majority of older people in particular, because of their risks for COVID, are vaccinated. So it's not surprising if the majority of people are vaccinated, even if the vaccines are working, the majority of deaths will be in people who are vaccinated.
Now, I'm not sure how to really parse that. Even if the vaccines are working, these are deaths from COVID. This is the story was set up. The woman said, this is a chart of people who have died of COVID. So the fact that these people are vaccinated but still died of COVID, and this guy says, even if the shots are working, they're still dying of COVID. I'm not sure. Logic long ago left the building.
That's why the chart from the State Department of Health and Human Services includes a key phrase, age-adjusted.
Oh, now we've got age-adjusted stuff. Back when we were counting every single case and every single death and every single hospitalizations, no age-adjusted there. It was just pure raw numbers to try to terrify the public.
The real question is not what percentage of deaths or hospitalization are in vaccinated or in unvaccinated. It's by age, what's the risk of death in vaccinated versus unvaccinated individuals.
And because we know immunity fades over time, it also highlights how important boosters are, including the...
So this is all designed to get you to take more shots. And he does say, you know, now that we know the shot's immunity wanes over time, you know what doesn't wane over time? Natural immunity. They haven't proven that natural immunity wanes. We got people who got SARS back in, 2003 that are still up to and including today testing positive for antibodies to the SARS of 2003. But when it comes to the shot, we know that the immunity wanes and you got to go get your boosters.
Ones coming soon that target the Omicron variants.
So that's really the question that you need to ask is vaccinated versus unvaccinated, what age group, and then did you have 2, 3, or 4 doses?
And in My Story Online, find out why Dr. Weber compares those COVID deaths to car wrecks.
So, of course, now we're talking about age. We didn't talk about it for years. That wasn't important. We were all to be sufficiently terrified all the way down to the college students who sacrificed years of their lives because they were at mortal threat. If we had seen the age-related deaths during COVID, we would have seen the exact same thing. But these are also, it's just interesting, these are elderly people. You would think that they've got a million things they can die from. We know that does happen in old age, but they're dying of COVID after being vaxxed. Mark Stein has got a TV show on GBN, which is, I think, Great Britain News, something like that. He had a guy on to talk about some of the athlete stuff. So even in Great Britain, which has lost its mind on COVID for sure, they do have some media over there kind of stirring the pot.
You've asked for a proper investigation into what is going on here. I take it you just suddenly noticed that there were footballers and boxers and rugby players dying more often than they should be.
Very much so, Mark. I've been involved in sport all my life. Not only that, I watch a hell of a lot of sport. It's pretty much the only thing I watch on the television. And I have seen so many people, so many incidents of young, fit, healthy sports people collapsing on their fields of play. And it's just not normal. And yet the media seem to be normalizing it. And nobody seems to be paying any attention whatsoever to this huge rise that has gone on. And for the authorities in charge of these sports to not notice it or not to be calling for an investigation, I think is absolutely scandalous. And I have been trying, and hopefully I'll get a meeting soon with the powers that be in football to try and put evidence before them to show them just what is happening, because they don't seem to want to investigate it themselves. And I think that's criminal.
Criminal. Remember that term? He thinks that that's criminal. Wait till we come back. Listen to what's going on down in Australia when it comes to this shot program. The medical profession in the United States might want to listen to this next clip. I'll be right back. You can always reach me by email at mikemadison@wiab.com. I love to get emails from people. Sometimes it takes me a little while to get back to people, and I do apologize for that. I'm a busy dude. I do several things outside of the station as well, so sometimes I'm a little derelict in my duty of checking these things if they do not all forward over into my email aggregating account. So I apologize for the delays. I check my emails oftentimes during the breaks. I've decided to start unsubscribing for stuff. It's this great feeling. I don't know how much time I spend every day just deleting emails. I don't know how I end up on these lists, but I just got off two during this past commercial break. That unsubscribe button is a beautiful thing. I have neglected to use it, and now I have got something like 89,000 unread emails in my email account because of these things. Anyway. I'm sorry to do a tease and then call an audible and do something else. When I come back, start the next hour, I'm going to play this clip from Australia. We want to see people held accountable for what's going on with this giant experiment on humanity that is not turning out well. Now, there's a lot of people that have had no ill effects that we can see, but what we can see may be the important part according to this next clip. And this was Dr. Robert Malone. Talking to he's a cardiac doc. Listen to the statistic here that this guy talks about with our athletes. This is on the heels of this other guy saying he's been in European soccer, football, over there for his entire life. He's never seen so many young athletes having problems as he has over the past year, 18 months. Here it doesn't seem, I've watched athletics here in the United States. We just got through a basketball season. There weren't a ton of headlines of athletes having problems. Listen to the statistic this guy gives on Big Ten football players.
So, Kirk, you're probably the most qualified physician scientist I've encountered for talking about pediatric damage to the heart associated with both the virus and the vaccine. In your opinion, if we have the mandates deployed in the state of California that Governor Newsom has signed into law, are we going to see significant numbers of death in damaged hearts in California from the vaccines?
I think depending on how many people they get to take it, I think the number is just a numbers game. I think as you look around the world, we're getting down to a number of somewhere between 1 in 3,000, 1 in 6,000. If we allow those kids to stay active and play, I think there's a lot of myocarditis that is under the radar. A recent study on elite athletes out of the Big Ten showed that when they looked at the cardiac MRI of the elite athletes, almost 50% had, or around 50% had myocarditis that wasn't known by symptoms. But was seen on cardiac MRI, and that put.
Wait, what? I'm going to let him say that again. They've done MRIs, I guess, proactively, Big Ten college athletics, and listen to this statistic. Now they start this off, and I'm going to have to research this. Does COVID cause myocarditis? I haven't heard a lot about that. I mean, it is a spike protein from the genetic therapies that people suspect is a problem. But maybe this is a COVID-related thing, too. But, I mean, think about the implications of this to this generation.
Myocarditis that is under the radar. A recent study on elite athletes out of the Big Ten showed that when they looked at the cardiac MRI of the elite athletes, almost 50% had, or around 50% had myocarditis that wasn't known by symptoms. but was seen on cardiac MRI, and that puts them at risk for sudden death. So I think that as we ramp this up for really to try to get everyone, like the mandate in California to get, you have to have a vaccine in order to go to school, then I think by what we see around the world, then the numbers of myocarditis cases will go up, and we may have an increase in sudden cardiac death associated with myocarditis just in kids playing on the field.
50% of Big Ten athletes are now, through MRIs, been shown to have myocarditis. Now, there's no symptoms to these. Maybe some of these, maybe a lot of these. Maybe it's more normal with other things in our environment that kids have had myocarditis for a while, but it doesn't ever manifest itself. It doesn't instantly kill them. That's a pretty big concerning thing. What do you do if you're the parent of an athlete that tested positive for myocarditis, but they want to continue their athletic career? 50%. That seems very worrying to me. We're going to talk about accountability for that when we come back. Stick around.
I see the shadows on my face. People have told me I don't look the same. Maybe I lost weight. I'm playing hooky.
All right, we are back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. Thanks for joining me here. Accountability. Now, I hear this across the conservative media landscape. And I would say probably on the left as well, although I'm not sure what they're looking for when it comes to accountability. They seem to be kind of getting their way and not realizing that getting their way is just destroying things. But on the right, in conservative media, I hear a lot of people talking about accountability. These people are never held accountable for anything. So we're going to take a look at a little bit of that today. I'm going to start with probably what's a fairly popular idea of accountability and maybe move into something that's probably a tad bit less popular. But I do not do this show by any kind of focus group, as is painfully obvious to anybody who listens. And so we're going to get into some things that might be more inconveniently truthy, I would say, possibly. Well, I'll let you make up your minds about that. The accountability around this grand genetic experiment we're doing, it apparently is not working out well. Now, it depends on who you are and how you view these things and what media you consume as to what not working out well means. Even if you are the most strident vaccine, air quotes here in the studio, vaccine supporter, you are noticing that the thing doesn't work. At the very most generous, it wanes over a period of time. And this is why we're now contemplating the fifth and sixth shots. MarketWatch. MarketWatch has a story today, a headline that says something like they're going to roll out boosters without even testing them. That is so weird. That to me is kind of like the economists who say, we may be in a recession by the end of next year. No, we're in a recession now. We are in a technical recession right now as we speak and have been in it since January of 2022. So CBS does a segment called Market Watch. And when I first found the Market Watch website, I thought it was the CBS product. It's not. It's a different thing. Market Watch, which is a financial website, Market Watch has got this headline expressing this surprise, pointing out that they didn't even test these new boosters. They're foregoing the testing process. Hello? They've foregone the testing process now for several years. If you haven't noticed, they did not test the original shots. Past maybe two months of human use, maybe a tad longer than that, a brand new technology. No long-term safety studies whatsoever, and the studies that were done prior to COVID-19 on animals didn't turn out so well. I'll just put it that way. I've talked about it before. I won't get into it now. So the fact you're surprised that they're not doing extended period trial periods of the boosters, I'm not sure where the surprise comes from, but the tide may be turning on this shot program, and that's what we're going to talk about some this hour. Now, down in Australia, we have seen them locked down I mean, we have seen the Australian citizens brutalized. There were stories of children who needed surgeries, unable to cross between the different Australian states because they were not vaccinated. I don't know how many of these children might have died, but there were stories like that. People could not go get life-saving surgeries just because of the potential, maybe they might possibly get COVID or spread it to somebody else, so they were denied access to life-saving care. Australia just lost its collective minds down there, and it was surprising to a lot of us. And a lot of people say, well, they let them take the guns, but nobody used guns here against the lockdowns either. It may be just a sign that the Australian citizens are ready to be ruled. But there is something coming out of Australia, and I think this is just maybe clip of the year. And we'll see if this is the beginning of a trend. I have made many times made mention of the fact that the lawyers may save us all. We love to make jokes about lawyers. Lawyers do things and represent people that we don't find very palatable. The judicial system in this country, and I'm sure it's the same in other Western countries, is so complex. You've got to hire this industry to represent you. It's a bit of a scam. But lawyers take a lot of ribbing, a lot of good lawyer jokes out there. Lawyers usually know the best ones. But it may be the lawyers that end up saving us all, and particularly when it comes to accountability. And I've said, just waiting for them to pierce the veil somehow against Pfizer and this entire shot program, as this is injured, even though the numbers, I'll still say this, I'm trying to be as objective as possible, considering the numbers of people who received these shots compared to the numbers of reported incidents of side effects to VAERS, they're still pretty small. It's not a one-on-one. You know, the percentage of people that are reporting problems with these shots is still small, but it is much, much, multiple times as large as any other shot campaign. During the swine flu epidemic of, I believe, 1976, or was it 73, 50 people died due to a new vaccine they were rolling out about swine flu. Boom, they canceled the entire program. I believe they had inoculated around 20 million people, but 50 died. They halted the entire thing. That was the 1970s. This is now. Now we've got tens of thousands of reported deaths, well over a million very serious adverse events, and they're just telling you to take more shots. That's how captured our government is by big pharma money and maybe some more nefarious plans. But down in Australia, there's some rumblings. I'll be very fascinated to see if this comes to the United States. And even if it's not here now, and we've got some very industrious attorneys here, there's going to be a lot of money to be made if they can pierce this veil of liability protection here. If I was in the medical profession and I had bought into this thing and coerced my patient population into taking part of this experiment and had seen, even though I don't want to admit it to myself, some of my patients got harmed. Now, I'll try to tell the patients that it's just a coincidence that your 14-year-old daughter is paralyzed after receiving this shot. She was probably going to be paralyzed anyway. 14-year-olds just get paralyzed all the time, just spontaneously. You may not want to admit it to yourself, but if I was in the medical community in the United States, I might be a tad bit nervous after hearing this clip.
Due to the scale of the rollout, it now appears tens of thousands of practitioners have repeatedly performed medical treatments properly termed gross medical and or professional negligence. With respect to patients receiving the COVID-19 injection.
This is a barrister down in Australia, like an attorney down in Australia. So this is what feels like kind of the opening salvo of the law community down in Australia that has watched what has taken place, seen the injuries. And I don't know the difference between liability protections for providers and pharmaceutical companies. I don't believe Pfizer would have offered their shots in Australia had they not been given liability protection. And here's the really gross thing for all the medical professionals out there that may start to get a little nervous upon hearing something like this. Just think the company that provided the product that is hurting so many people, this guy doesn't even name them. They are so shielded from liability protection. They gave you the defective product. They're off the hook. Now, I'm still hoping that they pierce that liability shield based on some level of fraud, because we know that people have come out and talked about these Pfizer trials that were fraudulent. And I don't know you can be held non-liable for something if it's proven that you committed fraud during the air quotes here in the studio, safety testing. But as of right now, it's down in Australia. Maybe they can't get to the pharmaceutical companies because Pfizer wanted this same liability protection. There were countries that said they were going to provide shots to, and the country said, we want your shots. And they said, uh-uh. In one case, what country was it? They wanted the country to pledge like military facilities and land and infrastructure to Pfizer kind of as a bond. If anybody sued Pfizer, they wanted the government to pledge a bunch of its assets to stand in the way of anything that would actually blow back on Pfizer financially. Pfizer will not go anywhere unless you give them complete immunity. That should concern everybody. Unfortunately, it does not. But so this guy doesn't even mention the pharmaceutical companies, but listen to the people that he believes are vulnerable to some level of accountability for what's taking place with the shot program.
Due to the scale of the rollout, it now appears tens of thousands of practitioners have repeatedly performed medical treatments properly termed gross medical and/or professional negligence. With respect to patients receiving the COVID-19 injectables, where each practitioner has no immunity from government whatsoever.
Uh-oh.
So these practitioners are therefore personally and professionally liable to actions for medical negligence.
Uh-oh.
From their patients receiving COVID-19 injectables, particularly those patients who subsequently died or suffered adverse side effects from the COVID-19 injectables. Additionally...
Now, this is what I really love. Okay, so the doctors, this guy is saying, down in Australia, you could be held personally and professionally liable if you injured any of your patients with this experimental gene therapy. That would imagine, and we don't know where this goes. Maybe this guy's just blowing off steam. Maybe he's just, I don't know. It seems to make some logical sense to me that if you're a medical practitioner, I mean, we have malpractice lawsuits in this country. They're used all the time. But it's not just the doctors. It's not just the doctors that this attorney says they're going after in Australia. They're going to get to the real source of even what forced the doctors to go along with this.
Due to the illegal nature of the AFRA and National Board's joint statement, it does also appear that the public offices of AFRA and the National Board's responsible for the creation and publication of the 9 March 2021 statement are now legally exposed to the action of misfeasance in public office.
So this is their equivalent of the NIH and the FDA here. He's saying the public officers of Australia's NIH, FDA, who put out statements saying, you know, this thing's safe and effective, everybody should take it, all of these other things. These officers are both personally and professionally responsible legally.
As the harm to COVID-19 vaccine victims was foreseeable in terms of these still remaining experimental gene-based therapies, these vaccine victims and future victims who later develop vaccine-related injuries and illnesses can sue the public offices of APRA and the national boards in their personal capacity.
Yeah, Anthony Fauci may have had to retire just so he could free up his calendar. He's going to spend a lot of time in court should this arrive in the United States. I'm not so sure it will. Our system is corrupt to the core. But wouldn't it be great to know that Anthony Fauci will spend his remaining evil years on planet Earth being deposed endlessly by rounds of plaintiffs? Whoa, that would be the most fitting retirement for Anthony Fauci, except for, you know, tar, feathers, stocks, those kinds of things, in prison, of course.
A further liability in the same public offices appears available to those registered practitioners who improperly administered the COVID-19 injectables in breach of their codes of conduct. Should those health practitioners subsequently be sued by their patients and they have to pay damages to their patients, then those health practitioners may in turn be able to sue the public officers of APRA and the national boards for coercing and threatening them to ignore their codes of conduct. Such illegal action, again, would be the tort of misfeasance in public office.
Oh, the feeding frenzy, the finger pointing that could go on within the medical community. So what he's saying basically is that it appears, according to Australian law, again, I don't know how that translates to American law, that the physicians who have been administering these experimental shots to the people of Australia are liable to the people of Australia, to anybody that they've harmed. And then the citizens, the patients, can sue their doctors for this. And then the doctors will be forced to turn around and sue their national health authorities, their equivalent of the NIH, the FDA, because they were forced. Well, we know a lot of doctors were very enthusiastic about recommending these shots to people, but they were told by the NIH, the FDA, the Mississippi Board of Medical Licensure, the state health department in each state, they were told by these bodies that these things are safe and effective and should be encouraged to everybody all the way down to our six-month-old toddlers. And so the doctors will turn around and start suing these people personally and professionally. I got to tell you, that's a show I want to tune in for. We'll see. I do not know, again, how translatable this is to American law. Maybe there's an attorney out there that can let us know if any of these physicians are liable. I would almost believe that we would have already seen some lawsuits filed from patients that were harmed by these things against their doctors if this was the case here. But this is new. We've never had something that was a national health emergency. I don't know what protections that brings. I know what it brings to the pharmaceutical companies themselves with the PREP Act and the rest of this, these liability protections that were granted to them by the anyone Trump administration and subsequently the Biden administration. But when it comes down to the doctor level, to the State Board of Health level, to the medical licensure boards that have been stripping doctors who spoke out against the vaccine, what liability they have, this would be a feeding frenzy for the attorneys that I would absolutely love to see. And we've got some very, very enterprising attorneys here, always noodling around on the law, trying to find a way to pierce this liability protection. Godspeed to them all. Be right back.
I saw a werewolf with a Chinese menu in his hand, walking through the streets of Soho in the rain.
We're going to talk a little bit more about accountability for these shots in just a second. I wanted to mention something about attorneys. I've talked about this before. Always at risk of, you do 2 hours a day, 52 weeks a year. Some things you will cover more than once. We're constantly duped into things. I think that most people can only see when the other side is duped into something and don't understand we've been duped into something. One thing, I was duped. I've told you many, many times, I was a Kool-Aid drinking, neocon, warmongering Republican during the 1990s. And it's kind of interesting to me now to see with the pursuit of Donald Trump by the Justice Department and the two impeachment proceedings that went on. Do Republicans ever stop and reflect that maybe what we did during the Clinton years for the Monica Lewinsky affair? I know, I carried water for it. I was all fine with Ken Starr's independent counsel and the impeachment trial of Bill Clinton for lying under oath about his affair with Monica Lewinsky. And this was largely kind of cranked up by Newt Gingrich. And I'm sure there's Newt fans out there. I am not one of them. Newt is he's a warmongering establishment Republican, but he took over the House for the first time in forever, and so he's a conservative hero to many, many people. I'm not a fan of any politicians. Newt Gingrich is a pretty slimy dude to me. But Newt Gingrich really kind of set this tone for really going after your political enemies in the White House and this impeachment stuff, and I just wonder if conservatives ever go, when we kicked all this impeachment, got to always impeach, trying to impeach, impeach, impeach. I mean, they were talking about impeaching George W. Bush and stuff. This was really kind of kicked off by but the impeachment of Bill Clinton. I'm no Bill Clinton fan, and what he did with the intern was disgusting. But do we ever stop and go, maybe we went a little overboard with just really trying to destroy the guy over having an affair and lying about it, which every married man does when he has an affair? I'm not excusing the behavior. I'm just saying, These are the kinds of things that, you know, we had conservative groups, Christian groups going out and demanding that books be removed and magazines be removed. Huge boycotts of Walmart if they had a certain author's title on a shelf or something behind the counter. You know, morally, we may agree with that. But now we see the cancel culture really revved up, and it's particularly when it comes to social media. I mean, a lot of it has its roots in this idea of constantly boycotting something you disagree with and trying to get authors pulled and their works crushed. It's just always, you know, kind of unintended consequences. But one of the things that I think conservatives really got duped into, and including myself, was the idea of this tort reform. That there are certainly abuses out there of the kind of the class action lawsuit. We know the ambulance chaser. There's certainly things in our court system that don't deserve to be there, that aren't with merit. They are done strictly to pursue and to target, whether it's a doctor or a business person or anybody. And so we've seen a lot of egregious cases of that. And so we were all convinced that the solution to that was some level of tort reform, which capped damages against, and particularly it was the kind of the medical profession, I think, kind of drove this. The problem is that what you end up with then is that some people really don't get justice. And when you realize that the agencies that profess to protect us, the FDA, the CDC, the National Institutes of Health, when you realize the USDA, the SEC, any of these organizations, when you realize how corrupt they are, and you realize that regular laws will never hold them accountable for anything, you're really left with kind of the trial attorney. Those attorneys that we kind of look down our nose at as being some kind of ambulance chaser or whatever, because they can make a lot of money. They take a lot of risk. They can lose a lot of money as well, particularly in these big class action lawsuits where plaintiffs don't pay anything unless they win. But when they win, some of these attorneys can make hundreds of millions of dollars. The tobacco settlements won. But they extend millions of dollars in getting experts and doing research and hiring attorneys and filing these cases. They're on the hook for that money if they don't win. So the reward is quite high when it comes down. Anyway, we've got this idea of trial attorneys always being bad, but I'm telling you, I think this is something we were kind of hoodwinked into, because I've realized over the course of the last several decades that really a lot of times trial attorneys are the only ones that hold companies like Monsanto accountable. Monsanto, which is now part of Bayer, they basically own our Congress. They own our regulatory bodies. You've got a lobbyist for Monsanto, I believe it was an attorney for Monsanto, ends up being, was his name, Michael Taylor, I believe. He ended up being the head of the FDA or the USDA? I can't remember, but it's that revolving door between these big industries and the regulatory bodies. While people get harmed, these companies have regulatory capture over these agencies. The agencies are not there to protect you. They are to boost these corporate profits. The trial attorney that is outside of that system representing victims is like the last line of defense we have from being completely run over. The biggest case, and I'm going to say it one more time because I find it absolutely incredibly interesting, and I believe there's a documentary about this out there. I wish I knew the title of it. One of the biggest cases that came around that seemed to be the abuse of the legal system by attorneys and people just trying to make money for themselves for doing something stupid. And it was the woman who spilled hot coffee on herself from McDonald's, and she got something like a $20 million verdict. And I think in particular, conservatives were kind of outraged about that, myself included, until I learned more about that case. And what it turned out was that McDonald's had done basically almost like a scientific study. And they had realized that if they increased the temperature of their coffee to this really intolerable degree, that the heat would actually expand the volume of coffee. And because they sold so many coffees, even this small increase in volume by having it at this high temperature, they would make an extra $20 million a year. So the heat was not there to keep coffee hot for the customer or anything like that. They actually jacked the heat up so high that it would scald human skin because they wanted to increase the volume to make $20 million more per month. I mean, per year, I believe it was. And so the verdict was actually based on 1 year's excess profit by McDonald's turning the heat up on its coffee so high that it scalded this woman and melted her crotch. Now, people will say, well, this woman was stupid. Who puts hot coffee in their lap? And, she, you know, maybe the cap wasn't on their right, whatever. but she wouldn't have gotten scalded if McDonald's had not made the calculated decision to run this coffee up to such a degree, not for the benefit of their customers, the taste of the coffee or anything like that. No, just to expand the volume of it so they could make an extra $20 million, and it became a dangerous thing. When you understand that about the McDonald's $20 million coffee lawsuit, it puts it into a different frame of reference. McDonald's just sacrificed 1 year of profitability, even though this coffee, I'm sure, had scalded other people before. So anyway, I just say that to say I was wrong about trial attorneys. There's certainly bad ones out there. There's certainly cases that should not be brought. Certainly cases of just complete greed that trample, you know, target people who shouldn't be attacked legally for a mistake or something like that. But in many cases, the trial attorney, it's like the last line in the sand. Once you realize that the regulatory bodies that are supposed to protect us are not there to protect us, they are there to protect industry, then you realize that the trial attorney is basically our last line in the sand. We'll see if they emerge as the saviors of us all, holding everybody involved in this genetic therapy accountable. Speaking of accountability, I'll get to more of that when we come back. Stick around.
Well, it would have been, could have been worse than you would ever know. On the dashboard melted, but we still have the radio.
All right, welcome back. This is the Mike Madison Show, 103.9 WYAB. We're talking about accountability around this SHOT program. Australia is making some sounds. At least a barrister down in Australia is saying that, you know, maybe these doctors, maybe these medical boards are going to be held responsible for what they call malfeasance, I believe, medical malfeasance. Here, I guess we would call it medical malpractice, for enlisting people in this grand experiment that has not turned out well for hundreds of thousands of Americans. So we'll see. And when it gets to accountability, now we're really good at holding the other side accountable for things, but I hear a lot on conservative radio, we need accountability. These people are never accountable for anything. Well, I'm going to show you an example of why they get away with not being held accountable. One thing is interesting to observe, and I am an observer. I don't carry water for either political party or for any politician. There's a meme going around in conservative circles that says, Mike Pence, isn't it something along the lines of, isn't it interesting that Mike Pence is the only person in Trump's close circle of people that has not been questioned by the FBI? Maybe I'm trying to set up a little bit of my track record here for you. I opposed Mike Pence and criticized him from the day he was announced, previous before I came on the radio, and from every day that I was on the radio, up to and including today. It never made any sense to me that this guy, Donald Trump, supposedly this outsider, is going to shake up the system, hired one of the most establishment guys you could almost imagine. Of course, I was told I was wrong. Mike Pence was on the team. I didn't understand the 4D chess. Well, yes, isn't it interesting that Mike Pence seems to be above reproach when it comes to everything surrounding January 6th or anything else? It's because Mike Pence was a horrific, terrible pick for vice president. He is the establishment. You don't get more establishment than Mike Pence, not to mention the fact that I believe he is actually the first cyborg to have attained higher political office. I don't believe he's fully human. I could be wrong about that, but if you listen to his speeches, he's programmed with this political talk thing that just makes him appear to me to be only partially human. It may be flesh and bones, but inside, I'm telling you, there's some gears and circuitry going on. But here's the other interesting head-scratcher, something that we're embarking upon now. And someone called my attention to this last week. I just be honest with you, I don't watch mainstream news. I find topics that are of interest to me and I think are not talked about in other conservative talk. I listen to plenty of conservative talk radio, but things I think that are missing from the conversation, that's what I focus in on. I don't do the political theater and every single headline that comes out, I don't cover it here. But apparently, and I saw a Politico story that was written about that Donald Trump, I guess a House committee has done some kind of investigation. And they've looked at the rollout of the shots, and maybe this means the tide is turning a little bit. Maybe they're realizing that they cannot continue to cover up the damage that these shots have done, and they're starting to lay some blame at the feet of Donald Trump. I think Tucker Carlson might have done a segment about something along these lines. I still haven't seen it. I couldn't find it online, and I don't have a cable subscription because I don't watch anything on television. But apparently they're talking about how this was rushed through, the pressure that was exerted on the FDA to approve these vaccines and get them out there. Now, this is interesting from the mainstream media that has been promulgating these things, obviously, for about 18 months now, because they are handmaidens to Big Pharma. Now, the vast majority of advertising money that goes to the mainstream media comes from Big Pharma companies. So now they're trying to target Donald Trump and blame him for the shots. I do as well. I believe he played a large part, very, very large part, and he is out there trying to claim credit for this and tells us that he saved hundreds of millions of people, always one for a tremendous amount of hyperbole. And it's interesting to see him get away with this. I've brought this up many times. It's not popular for me to do it, but what I see is conservatives settling in on this as a defense of Donald Trump's, I don't even want to say his participation in Operation Warp Speed. It's his brainchild. It is something he campaigned on. Operation Warp Speed is what Donald Trump sees as one of the greatest accomplishments in the history of mankind. Because everything that Donald Trump does has to be the biggest ever. And he has said this on multiple occasions, and continues to say so now. So here's where I believe the conservative, the Trump supporter line is settling down on this issue. A lot of people not happy with the fact that he's still out there telling his supporters, you should go get the shot. And for some reason, it gives him cover to go, well, I'm not trying to force you to do it. Now, that's great. That's great. Okay, I'll give him a little bit of credit for that. There are politicians out there that would send the National Guard out to hold us down and put it into our arms. That's not Donald Trump. But he is actually one of the people most responsible for rolling this out. So the conservative and the Trump supporter line that they seem to be settling on is Trump was lied to. So it is not his fault. He was lied to. He may have bragged about forcing the FDA to roll this thing out without any long-term safety studies. But what the Trump supporter is retreating to, apparently, is he was lied to. Not his fault. He's not a doctor, and the medical people lied to him. Now, my question about that is, first of all, do you really need to be a medical professional to understand that a drastic medical intervention like a vaccine should not be tested or should be tested for many, many years? I'm not a medical professional. A lot of people that I know knew immediately that rolling out any kind of, I don't care if it's a medical invention. And there's some tremendous ones out there if you've ever seen a surgeon use some of these things. But they test these things for years. Do you need to be a medical professional, have a medical degree in any field of study to know that you test anything that you inject into a human being for years, not months, years? Do you need to have a medical degree? Can you not just be a normal human being and listen to someone say, we're going to roll out, this is a brand new technology, we've never injected this into human beings before. We've done no long-term safety studies on this. We've just come up with this thing for a disease that, you know, is, what, 99.7% survivable by everybody, but that doesn't matter that this thing is not a catastrophic killer. We've got a brand new technology, never used before, didn't do well. Well, maybe Trump didn't know it didn't do well in the animal trials. I'll say, you know, that's for those of us that research these kinds of things. But just a regular human, a guy on the street, if you walk up and say, hey, we got a disease that is imminently survivable, but we want to roll out a brand new technology and inject it into the arms of hundreds of millions of Americans with no long-term safety study. Does not even the average American of average intelligence go, oh, that doesn't sound like a good idea. I think you need to test it for a while first. So the idea that Trump was lied to, I got to say, that seems a little light. You know, when we talk about accountability, and as I say, what I hear a lot on conservative media is these people need to be held accountable. Unless it's my guy. And then I'm going to go out of my way to find any excuse to excuse him for not delivering on X, Y, or Z, or for making a mistake. Now, here's the other one that I hear Trump supporters saying. Okay, this was definitely a mistake. He was bad on this one thing. He made this one mistake. Now, what's interesting about that is that this would be, if this was just Donald Trump's mistake. Now, I have not talked a lot. People kind of criticize me about piling on Donald Trump. He's not even president anymore. He's trying to become president again. I have been largely silent on Donald Trump for the last 18 months, but now apparently he wants to come back. And he wants your money and your support. I'm just going to point out some things that maybe you're not considering. If this was just Donald Trump's one mistake, it's a doozy. It may be the largest mistake in the history of mankind. If this is a mistake, I mean, you know, I don't know if there was a mistake made today with the Artemis rocket not being launched, but it was probably somebody made a mistake. So the rocket doesn't launch on Monday, it launches on Friday. Now, this is a big mistake. I'm sure there's hundreds of millions of dollars involved in these kinds of things. But that's a mistake we can all kind of live with. A mistake that is potentially going to cost millions of lives. Sons and daughters, moms and dads, brothers and sisters, great friends and spouses are suffering the consequences of this one mistake by the hundreds of millions around the world. There was an open letter written to Donald Trump, appeared on, where is it? stateofthenation.co. This is a conservative website, a Trump-supporting website. I'll read a little bit to this. As conservatives are pretty much demanding, it's time he comes out and says something about this and switches sides. By now, he certainly must know that this is a huge, air quotes here in the studio, mistake. It's a pretty big one. Does a mistake, the largest mistake that humanity has ever suffered under, does that not maybe disqualify somebody from holding office again? Seems, this is a, I don't know. Everything Trump does is always the biggest. I mean, he talks about how X, Y, or Z happened and people couldn't even imagine how big this was going to be. It's always, well, he's right about this one. I could not have imagined somebody making a mistake this size, like something people wouldn't have even believed possible. That's one of the things that he said during his term about any of his accomplishments. Turned out bigger than we could have ever imagined. Yeah, this mistake is one of those things as well. I'll be right back. All right, I've only got a few minutes left in this hour. I'll open this topic up tomorrow if you want to call. If somebody wants to call up in defense of Donald Trump on when it comes to this vaccine, it's just a mistake. He was lied to. My thinking is you don't have to be any expert in virology or immunology or even a medical professional to realize you don't roll out a brand new technology and jam it into the arms of innocent Americans without any long-term safety testing. That's just a no-go. I really don't care what people say. You cannot speed up long-term safety studies. That's why they're called long-term safety studies. It takes a long time to complete them. And this was a disease that was 99.7% survivable. If you take out the 70-plus crowd, about 99% survivable. This was not an emergency. And so if he just made this one mistake, does this not preclude him? I mean, I'm just saying, everybody's for accountability until it's their guy. And then suddenly we're making excuses why they couldn't do that. There's a lot of people that look at Jackson, Mississippi. They'll give you all kinds of excuses why Lumumba just can't get the water situation situated. You know, it's somebody else's fault. He was misled. I mean, I'm sure there's people who can always, everybody always wants accountability for everybody they don't like and just absolutely will refuse to demand any accountability from the people that they do like. If this was just a mistake, it's the biggest one in the history of mankind. Kind of seems like a big deal to me. I don't have time to get into this entire piece from State of the Union. They wrote this. It is an open letter. President Donald Trump, you had better read this open letter before it's too late. And it goes through this whole thing talking about, hey, by now, By now, you are fully aware that all the various COVID-19, quote, vaccines, unquote, have been scientifically proven to be extremely dangerous to human health and are often fatal. They talk about VAERS data there. It says, you've taken full responsibility for rolling out Operation Warp Speed with great efficiency and effect. Clearly, you were surrounded by many big pharma agents in the White House at that time whose only interest was to see the highly experimental and risky COVID vaccines mandated across America with all deliberate speed. Therefore, it's clear that those advisors knowingly lied and deceived you at every turn. Again, you don't deceive Mike Madison. What does the long-term safety study say about this thing? Well, I don't know. We haven't done any yet. Okay, well, we're not rolling this out then. We need to know what the long-term consequences of this thing are. This is a brand new technology. This is not a hard conversation to have and stand your ground on. I don't care how many big pharma stooges he put into the White House. And I'm going to also mention, you know, I mean, Pfizer did give $1 million to his inauguration fund. I'm just saying. I mean, I know I'm supposed to ignore that as well. That can't possibly be a problem. But what's really gross about this letter from State of the Union is it says, it should be noted this is another group, alternative media platform, SOTN, I assume that's State of the Nation, based in Tallahassee, Florida. This is what this State of the Nation, in the open letter to Donald Trump, they say, we sent out a very similar letter to Ron DeSantis in Florida. Within 2 weeks of sending out that letter, the good governor completely stopped calling the COVID vaccines, quote, safe and effective, and he started referring to them rather pejoratively as jabs. His approval rating soared shortly thereafter, both statewide and nationally. They're appealing to Donald Trump, hey, this would be great for you. This would be politically popular for you to do this. If Donald Trump needs to be swayed to come out and explain to people the horrific results of this genetic experiment on the American people, if the only way that he will do that is if you appeal to the fact that it might help his approval numbers, that's not a guy that you want running your country. He should do this because it's the right thing to do. He should do this because he's seen the consequences. As a human being, he should blow the whistle on this thing. Not because it's good for his political fortunes. See you tomorrow.
No matter how hard you try, you can't stop us now. No matter how